Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, January 28th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Voter suppression bill from Senator Brian Lenny of Nampa banning signing affidavits at polls on Election Day if you don't have an ID as proof of who you are. Coeur d'Alene School Board working on addressing racist incidents. And Governor Ferguson and elected leaders decry Border Patrol detention of Guatemalan man and 10-year-old daughter in Spokane. Father and daughter are now in a processing center in Dilley, Texas. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson has criticized the Border Patrol for detaining a Guatemalan father and his U.S.-born 10-year-old daughter in Spokane. Federal immigration agents detained Guatemalan Arnaldo Tile Kahl on January 9th after he dropped off his daughter, Carla Tile Baltazar, at Logan Elementary School. The agency then shipped the pair to a federal immigration processing center in Dilley, Texas, the next day. Governor Ferguson issued a statement Friday which said, "President Trump says he's going after criminals. Tell me what crime this 10-year-old committed. Spokane has been her home since she was four while her dad sought asylum. Now she's in a detention facility in Texas. This is wrong and un-American." Tony Polignani told the Spokesman Review as he picked up his children at Logan Elementary School, "It sounds like her father was a good person just trying to make a good life for his family. It's just sad that kids have to go through this. She didn't get to say goodbye to her friends, and her friends had to find out this way." During 3 hours in the Border Patrol office in the north part of Spokane on January 9th, Tahul Kahl insisted he could not leave his daughter, who was born in Guatemala and has no other family in the U.S. The Border Patrol officials coerced Tahul Kahl to sign papers saying he would leave the U.S. voluntarily and let him pick up Carla from school and told him to return to the office with his daughter the next day. Olga Lucia Herrera, who has been helping Tahul Kahl get through court proceedings in his asylum case during his years in Spokane, drove him and his daughter to the Border Patrol office the next day. They had packed two bags of belongings each, and an off-duty customs official trailed them as they drove. Herrera told the Spokesman Review Tahul Kahl has an active asylum case with a court date set for 2027, a valid work permit, and a Social Security number. He has no criminal record and has made every appointment for regular check-ins with immigration officials, except for one he missed during the holidays because he was having problems with his phone. Herrera said, during the January 9th detention, Border Patrol agents threatened to separate Tahul Kahl from his daughter if he did not sign what they called a voluntary self-deportation paper. The two are now waiting in the detention center in southern Texas for their next date before an immigration judge, Veronica Marie Segovia, scheduled for March. Logan Elementary School has a higher percentage of Hispanic and Latino students than average for the Spokane School District. The number of English language learning students is 18% there, whereas district-wide it is 9%. The Spokesman Review said they approached Latino families who were at the school to pick up their children, and most did not want to make a public statement in the current political climate. A Logan Elementary School student's mother, who declined to give her name, told the Spokesman Review, "I think this is absolutely horrible and traumatizing the child it happened to and the children here who have to witness it. I think the schools should definitely be a safe zone, and no parent should feel like they're going to be targeted for taking their child to school and doing the right thing." Spokane Mayor Lisa Brown wrote in a text Friday that the detention of Tayol Kahl and his daughter is an example of Department of Homeland Security overreach. Brown wrote, "The federal government keeps telling us they are focused on criminals, yet a Spokane father and child, neither of whom have a criminal record, were detained and sent to Texas. That contradiction demands accountability, and Congress needs to step up to ensure this does not keep playing out in our cities." Democratic U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington said she is looking into the case, but her options are limited. Senator Murray wrote, "This week, the Trump administration decided to detain a hardworking roofer with a 10-year-old daughter who's lived in America the majority of her life, a family who, as far as I know, did everything legally to be here. Trump isn't going after criminals or the worst of the worst. He's deporting hardworking people who make our communities better." Spokane School Board President Jenny Slagle, who attended a religious vigil for those experiencing ICE attacks in Minneapolis and other people affected by the situation, said, "I was offering a prayer for our neighbors and shared humanity. We gathered today to support those who have gone to Minneapolis and are doing the work here locally to support people who are struggling, especially children and families like Carla's, whose hopes and dreams were taken away." Spokane City Council member Sarah Dixit wrote on social media, "Parents and children should feel safe walking to school, getting an education, being part of this community because it is their community too. Customs and Border Patrol stalking this father who is an active asylee and his 10-year-old daughter is absolutely disgusting." During a press conference Friday on an unrelated issue, Councilmember Zach Zappone said, "We have opposed the terror that ICE has been wreaking on our community. Just this week, we saw that an elementary student was taken from our community, and these things are wrong. It is absolutely wrong." Republican Senator Brian Lenny of Nampa introduced a bill today that would outlaw the signing of an affidavit at a polling place as a way to vote for people who have forgotten their IDs. Idaho, which allows voters to register at the polls on Election Day, has had the affidavit option available for years to voters who are already registered. According to the Idaho Press, Senator Lenny admits that few people use the affidavit option in Idaho. But he did use that option on Election Day last year to try to verify his claim that nobody checks the validity of the affidavits. He said, "Of the more than 213,000 Idahoans who cast ballots in the November 2025 election, 587 signed affidavits attesting to their identity at their polling place, which is just over a quarter of 1%. However, the Boise-based youth voting rights organization Babe Vote said in a press release, "Many counties in Idaho do not tally how many voters use different forms of ID at the polling place, meaning there may be a higher number of affidavit voters than reported. Under Idaho election law, a voter can sign an affidavit at their polling place instead of presenting a non-student photo ID for identification. The affidavit includes the voter's name, address, and a signature swearing to the identity provided. The affidavit notifies the voter that providing a false identity would be perjury, which is a felony in Idaho. The person is then allowed to vote." Last year, Senator Lenny proposed a similar bill that did not pass. In 2023, the Idaho House narrowly voted against a bill from Republican Representative Joe Albieri of Coeur d'Alene that would have banned the use of affidavits as voter identification. During that vote, House members said they were skeptical that affidavits were being used to commit voter fraud and said removing the option would remove a way for elderly residents to vote who no longer drive and don't have a driver's license. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
In the days and weeks since two protesters were killed by federal agents in Minneapolis, federal officials have called the victims dangerous domestic terrorists. A Boise State University professor says this framing could have consequences for freedom of speech. A U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent shot and killed Renee Good on January 7th. and a Border Patrol officer did the same to Alex Preddy on January 24th. Both were protesting the surge of immigration agents to Minnesota. Sam Martin is the Frank and Bethine Church Endowed Chair of Public Affairs in the School of Public Service at Boise State University. She believes this rhetoric from political leaders is meant to justify stronger surveillance and harsher enforcement on activists, nonprofits, and local networks.
It's not primarily that speech is going to be prosecuted as a sort of criminal matter, something that people are not allowed to say and that they'll be punished for with fines or jail or whatever. The problem is expanding investigative pressure and stigma around people's First Amendment rights to engage in lawful political protests and lawful political activity.
Federal officials in both cases claim the agents were acting in self-defense when they killed Good and Preddy. Martin also notes that a document released by the Trump administration last September, called National Security Presidential Memorandum 7, could have lasting impacts on how speech is treated. She says the memo has allowed the administration to target people exercising protected free speech and has been used to create a false choice for Americans. Freedom or security?
You can actually have both, and we're entering into an era where we're acting like we have to choose one or the other, and that historically has always proven very dangerous.
In the aftermath of the shooting, Minnesota and the federal government have clashed over an investigation into Preddy's death. Martin says there's a lot at stake with the investigation.
The key question isn't what happened, but whether the process for figuring out what happened, and not just for who's responsible, but for how to prevent it in the future, that process needs to be transparent and credible. And that transparency and that credibility in official sources is what's really at stake right now.
According to the Associated Press, Greg Bovino, Border Patrol's commander at large, is expected to leave Minneapolis today amid backlash over the killings. Border Czar Tom Homan will take charge of federal operations. An unspecified number of other federal agents are also expected to leave the city. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Giant Palouse Earthworm, providing DIY music booking in Moscow and Pullman, focusing on extreme metal, punk, hardcore, and the avant-garde. Giant Palouse Earthworm is available on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors for helping make this programming possible.
An Oregon task force has unveiled its plan to push back against federal cuts to food assistance. More than 300,000 Oregonians have lost or had their SNAP benefits reduced since the passage of H.R. 1 or the One Big Beautiful Bill Act back in July. Jessica Morris is with Meals on Wheels People and a member of the steering committee for the Oregon Hunger Task Force. She says the state is not ready to step in when federal food programs like SNAP fall short.
How do we create a more resilient food network so that regardless of what is happening with legislation and whoever is in administration, that we can ensure that no Oregonian goes hungry?
The task force's agenda includes a one-time allocation to support food banks and pantries across the state, legislation to reduce barriers to apply for benefits, and making school meals free for all students. Morris points to research that shows students do better in school when they're fed and that there's less stigma if everybody gets a free meal. She adds the meals must meet specific nutritional guidelines.
No matter where you live, there are children that don't have access to food, and when they get home, they don't have any food.
Roughly 1 in 6 Oregonian children experienced food insecurity during the most recent reporting period, according to the USDA. Nearly 95% of Oregon public schools already provide free school meals for all students following recent changes to income eligibility, and Morris says the task force aims to close the remaining gap. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The nation's largest lobbying arm of the oil and gas industry is calling on Congress to shield companies from a growing number of lawsuits and state laws passed to make the industry pay for the impacts of pollution. The American Petroleum Institute's 2026 policy priorities include ending the expansion of climate superfund policies recently passed in Vermont and New York. Claire Dorner with the Sierra Club says these new laws simply say if you make a mess, you need to clean it up.
It isn't fair that big oil and gas companies are continuing to rake in record profits while we pay the price for pollution and lies, literally paying the price, and we need to make them pay for their damages.
Superfund laws have also been introduced in California, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, but are not expected in Wyoming. The American Petroleum Institute calls the new laws abusive and is urging Congress to intervene to maintain U.S. energy leadership around the world. The Institute also wants lawmakers to speed up permitting processes in order for the industry to make investments they say would strengthen the nation's energy grid. But taxpayers in Wyoming and across the U.S. are already making investments in the fossil fuel industry. Tony Aguilar Rosenthal with the Revolving Door Project says as working families struggle with the rising cost of housing, groceries, and utilities, U.S. oil and gas companies currently receive over $34 billion in government handouts every year.
It's really important to not just make polluters pay for the immensity of the damage and the harm that they cause, but also to stop public subsidies, which is billions of dollars every year.
Dorner says the Institute's goal of blocking state laws that hold fossil fuel companies accountable is just the latest example of an industry kicking the true costs of climate change down the road.
They've known since the 1970s that continuing to burn fossil fuels is going to lead to disaster, and they actively lied throughout the decades to try to maintain the status quo so that they could continue making their profits.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
The Coeur d'Alene School Board Safe and Welcoming Schools Task Force has been working for a year and a half on a proposed anti-bullying policy focused on what they call bias-based disrespectful conduct. The Board of Trustees created the task force after reports of racist slurs in the school and visible racist incidents in the community. The district's executive director of secondary education, Trent Derrick, told the trustees, "Parents have been frustrated over racist slurs targeted towards their children." Derek said, "How many times does my child have to hear this before something changes?" In March 2024, men in pickup trucks trailed the University of Utah women's basketball team on Sherman Avenue, yelling slurs, waving Confederate flags, and revving their trucks' engines at them. Weeks later, a group of Coeur d'Alene tribal school students on a field trip in Coeur d'Alene said they were racially harassed by a group of men who told them to go back to the reservation and imitated feathers behind their heads. The proposed policy defines bias-based disrespectful conduct as any singular expression, conduct, or speech that has the effect of intimidating, degrading, or threatening a person or group due to their identity and personal characteristics. It differs from general disrespectful conduct because it's tied to bias towards an individual or group based on characteristics that cannot be changed, like race, color, sex, age, gender identity, religion, disability, nationality. And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be mostly cloudy tonight with a steady temperature around 36, 20% chance of rain after 10 p.m., snow level 3,900 feet rising to 4,600 feet after midnight, 50% chance of rain tomorrow, snow level 4,000 feet rising to 5,100 feet in the afternoon, cloudy, high 39, 30% chance of rain Thursday night, mainly after 4 a.m., cloudy, low 35, and a 30% chance of precipitation on Friday. Chance of rain before 10 a.m. and a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m. Cloudy, high 45. Current temperature is 34 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartas. Have a good night. Coming up next, Flashpoint, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. At 7:30, Lockdown Mosh Pit. And at 8:30, Music Begins in Earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades, hosted by Arlene. And tonight at 10, looks like we have Bossa Brazil, Brazilian music, a syndicated show. So stay tuned for that. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.